Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay? No. Hello? There we go. I'll stand over here. My name is Matt Campbell, and I'll be convening this morning. I welcome everyone, old and young, members and visitors, to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I encourage visitors to sign the guest book near the front entrance and join us for coffee following the service so we can get to know you a little better. The UUFM is a community with diverse interests and values that has no creed and no dogma, but we are guided by the seven principles listed on the back of your bulletin. UUFM is a welcoming congregation that strives to achieve equality and respect for everyone. Our interests and values follow many paths, and as a result, the topics of our services are diverse. Today, we will be discussing gardening, and a few fellowship members will describe the influence of gardening in their lives. First up, announcements. I'd like to direct your attention to the bulletin. I have a few additional announcements here, too. This is from Ann Cohen. She says that the Social Action Committee will meet this Wednesday on August 14th at 5:30 here at the UU. They are open to new members and probably actively seeking. And you can find more information from Sue after the service. She'll be at the coffee station. And also, Mark Mosier was in the news on the Manhattan Mercury. If you want it, we have an article right here for you. As we light today's chalice, let us contemplate the idea. Today we light the chalice contemplating the connection we have with the earth and the plants that cover it. Plants are amazing. Oops, I can't move. From a tiny seed, with soil, sunlight, and water, a giant tree can be created. These extravagant structures sustain us. Got two quotes this morning that I thought were fitting. The first is by John Muir, and when one tugs at a single thing in nature, he finds it attached to the rest of the world. And then the second quote from Henry David Thoreau, and both these guys are instrumental in they're naturalists and were instrumental in the 1800s. I think John Muir is a little older. But Henry David Thoreau was the very well-known naturalist. How important is a constant intercourse with nature and the contemplation of natural phenomena to the preservation of moral and intellectual health? All right, at this time, we'd like to share our joys and concerns if you feel moved to do so. I was going to do that after.
Judy and I are celebrating our 85th and 86th birthday very happily together, happy to be together, and have been celebrating it with friends and family, and we are very grateful to be a part of this very caring fellowship. And I might just show you that we were greeted by a cardinal this morning, wishing us happy birthday. And apparently, when the male finds a female, they keep singing until their songs are a duet.
More of a concern, more on behalf of my wife. She was treated extremely shabbily in a customer service situation, which she's just not used to, particularly when she can try to stare them down. But she's biked most of her life and was treated shabbily by a bike store, and they said they were no longer going to serve her because she tried to press for something, and she was upset all weekend, has been upset all weekend about it.
Diane Barker. A lot of you know my husband, Chris Ross, and he just recently dodged a bullet. He didn't know he had a ruptured appendix, and he went in, and they told him, oh, this will be outpatient. It's not ruptured. We see it on the CT scan, and they got in there, and he had a ruptured appendix. He's great. He's recovered, and the only really tough part of it was the way they kept him in the hospital against his will. So it's a happy outcome, and I'm so grateful.
I am Rose, and I have a concern that I broke my arm.
Sybil Perkins, I just wanted to share a personal milestone that I reached yesterday that I was really proud of. The odometer on my bicycle passed 1,000 miles.
Ann March, and I have a lot of guests here today. My third daughter, Madeline, is here with her two kids, Clementine and Sylvie. Sylvie was just born in March. And then my other daughter, Marjorie, who just got married. Marjorie and Aaron just got married end of June, so I'm happy to have them here. And this is Peter, my son-in-law. Oops, sorry, Peter.
All right, Dick. We're going to sing the garden song. There's an insert in your program.
Please stand and join in as soon as you recognize it.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low and make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rains come a-tumbling down. Pulling weeds and picking stones, we are made of dreams and bones. Need a place to call my own, for the time is near at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way through nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain to the music of the land. Plant your rows straight and long, temper them with prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. Old Crow watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. In my garden I'm as free as a feathered thief up there.
Kids, you want to come forward for the children's story? Be read by Jen Campbell this morning.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. So today we're talking about gardening, and I'm going to read you a book called Isabella's Garden. This is the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. These are the seeds that sleep in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. This is the rain that soaks the seeds that sleep in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. These are the clouds that cry the rain that soaks the seeds that sleep in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. This is the sun that kisses the clouds that cried to the rain that soaked the seeds that slept in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. These are the shoots that seek the sun that kissed the clouds that cried to the rain that soaked the seeds that slept in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. These are the flowers that waltz with the wind that ruffles the buds all velvety skinned that swelled the shoots that sought the sun that kissed the clouds that cried the rain that soaked the seeds that slept in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. This is the chick in the thistledown vest that was hatched by the bird with a scarlet breast, that sang while the buttercups waltzed with the wind, that ruffled the buds all velvety skinned, that swelled the shoots that sought the sun, that kissed the clouds that cried the rain, that soaked the seeds that slept in the soil, all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. This is the climbing tree, leafy and appled, that speckles the garden with shade deep and dappled, that shelters the chick in the thistledown vest that was hatched by the bird with the scarlet breast, that sang while the buttercups waltzed with the wind, that ruffled the buds all velvety skinned, that swelled the shoots that sought the rain, that kissed the clouds that cried the rain, that soaked the seeds that slept in the soil all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. These are the leaves turning crimson and gold that brighten the branches as evening grow cold, that cling to the tree that was once green and appled, that speckled the garden with shade deep and dappled, that sheltered the fledgling in feathers now dressed, that was hatched by the bird with the scarlet breast, that sang while the buttercups waltzed with the wind, that ruffled the buds all velvety skinned, that swelled the shoots, that sought the sun, that kissed the clouds, that cried the rain, that soaked the seeds, that slept in the soil, all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. This is the mantis that prays to the moon, that winter come never or not quite so soon, and sighs at the leaves, now crimson and gold, that tremble and tumble on evenings grown cold, and lie neath the tree that was once green and appled, that speckled the garden with shade deep and dappled, that sheltered the fledgling now flown from his nest, that was missed by the bird with the scarlet vest, that wept when the petals were tossed by the wind, that ruffled the buds all velvety skinned, that swelled the shoots, that sought the sun, that kissed the clouds, that cried the rain, that soaked the seeds, that slept in the soil, all dark and deep in Isabella's garden. But despite what the mantis begged of the moon, winter comes swiftly and silent and soon. Jack Frost spreads his mantle of sequins and shimmer, encrusting the garden with glisten and glimmer. Till all that remains is a well-feathered nest that was built by the bird with the scarlet breast, and a handful of seeds for the wild wind to blow, enough, just enough for a garden to grow. These are the seeds that slept in the soil, all dark and deep, in Isabella's garden. Thanks for listening, guys.
Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. This is the second Sunday of the month. This is a Helping Hand Sunday. In our organization this week is the Flint Hills Community Clinic, and we have Drew Venom filling in for he's being the representative, I guess, today.
Yeah, I don't work at the Flint Hills Community Clinic, but the director who normally comes to speak to us had a family emergency, so I'll represent them the best I can. I didn't realize this until she sent me the information to present, but the Manhattan has only had a community clinic for 8 years. They only opened in July of 2005. That first year, they saw only 330 patients. Last year, they had over 1,600 appointments. So they've grown to be a pretty vital and important force. They just had a strategic planning session last year, and they've come up with several new initiatives. They have gotten some volunteer retired social workers. So the Flint Hills Community Clinic is now doing case management and wellness planning with their patients so that it's not just patching people up and sending them off. It's trying to help improve people's health in the community. They have a new diabetes management program where they're able to, through the funding that they have, buy supplies and provide blood sugar testing and insulin free of charge to the people that qualify. There are 10,000 people uninsured in Riley County, and of those, 8,000 qualify for the community clinic. So there's a huge need in the community for a clinic like this, and they're doing very good work. So the clinic will appreciate whatever we're able to donate. Thank you.
I think we skipped our reading. Sybil, you want to come up in? We'll do it right after you. Is that okay? I skipped over it.
Good morning. I need to first confess that I took a few liberties with Mr. Berry's quote, but I think it retains the essence. Odd as I'm sure it may appear to some, I can think of no better form of personal involvement in the cure of the environment than that of gardening. A person who's growing a garden, if she's growing it organically, is improving a piece of the world. She's producing something to eat, which makes her somewhat independent of the grocery business, but she's also enlarging for herself, for her family, and sometimes her friends and neighbors, the meaning of food and the pleasure of eating.
All right, we'll now have our offertory. Give as you see fit, and remember any unmarked donations will go to the Flint Hills Community Clinic. This is a thunderstorm. Please meditate while we listen. It'll pick up here. If you're my son, you would have fallen asleep there. So. All right. I'm going to begin our service here. Gardening is a hobby, however, a special hobby, unlike any other one. One that not only provides intellectual stimulation, physical stimulation, and leisure, but one that satisfies the most basic needs, food. Gardening is a connection to the natural world. With your hands in the soil, with the sun on your back, you can't ignore Mother Nature at work. Gardening is spiritual, from the seeds that sustain us to the rain that falls as we dance. I'd like to welcome our first speaker, Sylvia. Go first here. Someone had to do it. We have four speakers. Diane Barker is going to fill in for Jen. So Jen was listed, but we have four speakers this morning.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Hello. Gardening provides me a link with my family history. My interest in gardening was spawned in the family I grew up in. During the growing season, my mom would hand me a pair of scissors and tell me to go cut a bouquet for the supper table, or asked me to cut some parsley or chives for whatever she was cooking. She particularly liked flowers that were perennials, like iris, passion flower, spring bulbs, coral bells, buttercups and gladiolus, or self-seeding annuals like snapdragons, calendulas, zinnias, and marigolds. I was fascinated by all the flowers and also all the trees in our yard. I used to, if I couldn't go to sleep, I used to close my eyes and imagine all the flowers, like I was walking around my yard and all the trees. And I think that I also was fascinated by all the visitors to the flowers and the trees, and I think that's why I ended up studying entomology in graduate school. Our house always had a colorful table and yard. The plants also graced the interior of our house, including the fireplace, which my mom filled with shade-loving tropical varieties, so we never had a fire. She sealed many a friendship, as did my dad, by swapping plant clippings, and that's a practice that I continue. My father came from a long line of dirt farmers in the deep south. He spent his summers working on his uncle's watermelon farm, and he had a graduate degree in botany. He taught me the names of all the flowering plants and conifers. He told me which of the so-called weeds were edible for humans or good for my pet rabbits. He always had an old coffee can and a weeding iron in his car, so if he saw an interesting sapling along the road on his way to work, he could stop and dig it up and transplant it to our yard or collect some interesting seeds. We were the only family in our neighborhood of manicured lawns and ornamental shrubs who composted kitchen and yard waste, had large separate piles of ashes, leaves, sand, and manure that my dad hauled in a little trailer he hitched to his car after work and came home in his crummy clothes, which he used to improve our soil. Only our dad plowed the entire backyard and replanted it in annual rye, which towered above our little heads, in order to loosen the soil in preparation for planting a lawn. My dad taught me how to propagate plants from seeds and the vegetative parts of plants. Gardening instructs me in many life lessons beyond the botanical ones. Number one, the lesson of relationship. Before my first botany class in college, I already was very familiar with many plant families. I have in this vase here some of the members of the mint family. There's catmint, bergamot, hyssop, sage, rosemary, thyme, peppermint, lamb's ears, and maybe some I forgot. There's also this strange mystery mint that someone gave me. All the mints have square stems. Most of them have aromatic leaves, and they have similar flowers. Most of them have antimicrobial properties. But each one is unique. And my mystery mint smells somewhere between peppermint and lavender. I don't know what it is. I don't know its name. It hasn't bloomed this summer. Usually it would have bloomed by now, and it smells heavenly when the rain pelts it. But I just noticed it's starting to make its inflorescence, and it will have fluorescent blue flowers. The mint family reminds me that all people are connected by their humanity and by their similar requirements for a happy life. But the individual mints remind me that each person has unique attributes, weaknesses, and strengths that I will discover if I take the time to know and appreciate them as they are. Number two, the lesson of cooperation and camaraderie. I've spent many happy hours having bean-snapping competitions with my siblings in the garage on a rainy day, untwining honeysuckle vines from the native dogwood trees in the woods, our woods, with my dad, cutting grass with a push mower with my younger brother so that we could feed it to our rabbit. Our whole family was canning peaches at 3 a.m. one summer night, or I guess early in the morning, when Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. We were watching on our TV while we peeled and stuffed peaches into jars. My next-door neighbor and I shared tasks and confidences working side-by-side in our plots in the community garden. We soon learned that she excelled at planting, I at weeding. While our hands toiled, our minds sorted through quandaries about kids, spouses, jobs, what to make for supper, and any number of other things. My garden teaches me that it doesn't exist just for human benefit. It's a complex cooperation between me, soil microbes, pollinators, beneficial and deleterious insect pests, spiders, lizards, snakes, little mammals, and birds. I like to think that there is plenty of food in my garden to share with all these creatures and with other people too. Number three, the lesson of patience. Gardening teaches me that things unfold according to their own plan, not mine. Plants, people, and events have a course that is not for me to determine. I can prepare the bed and responsibly nurture it, but I cannot coax a beet from a chard seed, even though they're the same species, nor can I force a person to do something against their will. A seed or a person will germinate when conditions are right for it, not because I am ready. Number four, lesson of cycles. Each season brings my garden its unique blend of riotous growth, flowering and fruiting, maturation and decay, dormancy, healing, and renewal. Each year brings a repetition and variations on the same themes. One season in my garden is like a fast-forward preview of my life. It grounds me in nature's realm. Number five, lesson of wonder and discovery. My garden is an endless source of interest, amusement, drama, human and botanical, mystery and magic. It keeps me fresh in body and mind in a world that could easily become numbingly humdrum. Can you think of anything more amazing than this tiny thing using air, water, and sunlight to turn into an enormous tomato plant bigger and wider than me? These are just some of the things that gardening teaches me. Thank you.
Next, we have Diane Baker. I think she's going to... Barker? Gosh. I'm sorry.
You needed to know that. I see a theme developing here, and it definitely is connectedness. And Sylvia, I'm so glad that you brought the mints in, because I think all gardeners are adventurers, and really we're all gardeners. And my little talk today... that's supposedly 5 to 10 minutes long, I decided to title My Life as a Foraging Gardener because I like to take advantage of what's already out there for me. It's not that I'm lazy. I don't label myself that way. But as I walk along, because I'm a practical human being, I go, well, what can I eat? What out here is edible? That's my first question. I guess the next one is, oh, well, part of that. Part A is, can I eat it? Part B is, will it kill me? When I take kids out on the Kansa Prairie, the only way I kind of get their control and stop them, you know, because I'll say, I'm your docent, stay behind me, you know, don't run ahead of me, don't touch anything unless I give it to you, because there's a plant out here called death camas. They go, why is it called that? I say, because it can kill you. So that's why you don't eat anything. You don't just grab it. Then they ask, how did people find out? You know, I mean, don't you? You just love children's questions. I just absolutely love them. So anyway, my approach to nature is very, very practical, and to gardening, too. And what I'm hoping we do after my little talk, or after everybody talks, after we've talked about gardening, is that we all recognize that we're keepers of the seeds. And Sylvia sort of already touched on this. And to be a keeper of the seeds, you have to know the plants fairly intimately. You know when they come up, when they leaf, when they flower, or have an inflorescence. And then when they put on their seed and you watch them, and a lot of plants, the timing is very important. When you you have to get it at the right time. You know, if you get the seeds too early, it's not going to work. And you want them when they're loose and falling. I brought some seeds in. Maybe some of you know this plant. Does anybody know this plant? This is such a cool seed. I call it a winged beach ball because, you know, and it's perfect for here. You know, I think, why don't more plants use this? But, you know, the wind blows it along. And I'll pass this around. And I brought these because I'm going to scatter them up on our property. But these are the seeds of the Missouri evening primrose. Do you know which one that is? It's the big, it's tropical looking. It's a, I have a picture of it here, but this picture doesn't really do it justice. Yellow, fragile, exotic looking, and a little thin plant like so many of our native plants are. And the seeds will eventually fall out as this dries, it opens up. And each one of these four veins has two lines of seeds in it. I love to open these up and collect the seeds and scatter them. And then this friend of mine said, why are you going to all that trouble? Let the seed do the work. Throw the seed pods out there. I went, oh, yeah, okay. So anyway, let me pass that around. You know, nature is the ultimate architect, engineer. She does it all. We are just her students. Okay, so as a forager, you know, I want to know, what can I eat? Then I want to know, if this is a plant that I really like, how do I get it into my garden? So that's what I've been doing is, you know, transplanting or getting the seeds of pitcher sage, butterfly milkweed, Dakota verbena, of course, the gay feathers, button blazing star, all the showy ones. I like those. And I like little tiny not showy things like draba. And if any of you are interested and want to get to know these native plants that are many times impossible to see unless somebody shows them to you, or unless you are the kind of person who likes to dive down and separate the grasses and find these plants. We have a wonderful resource in the Kansas Native Plant Society, and we have a wonderful man named Jeff Hansen, who is our webmaster. He knows everything about propagating these plants, and he was the person who warned me. He said, Diane, do not try to dig up butterfly milkweed. You will snap off the end of the taproot. I went, oh, hey, I'm smart. He's told me the trick. I'm going to get my sharpshooter. I'm going to get the smallest plant I can and go way down there and get the whole taproot. No. A tiny, tiny bit of the taproot broke off because I had to watch the plant die. And, you know, it took it days and days. And so I went, I'm going to start listening to people. I'm going to start following their instructions. And now I bought some butterfly milkweed from the nursery. That's not really what I want. I want the one out on the prairie. But I have yet to collect the seed. And I see all kinds of people, you know, saying, yeah, uh-huh, nodding their heads. And so I know we all have wonderful adventures in gardening and trying to bring wild plants into our yards. And so I want us to all have a seed cooperative, and that's why I started with Missouri Evening Primrose. It's an easy one. And this can be extended to, you know, regular vegetable gardening and things like that, but I want us to take advantage of this wonderful resource that's out there. You know, you can either just leave it alone, or you can, in working with it, because you know it, bring it in. How about this one? People recognize this one. I see Pat is nodding her head and some other people. Okay, this is the wild blue indigo, and it has a yellow variant, and it makes a really nice rattle, and the seeds are really big. So this is a wonderful one. And this is your Cobaea penstemon, and the seeds will fall out eventually. This, and I brought this in because it's instructive to really think about whether or not you do want something in your garden, because I have committed the cardinal sin of gardening. I have let things that I do not want in my garden go to seed. You know, I can't believe I did that, but now I'm suffering from it. Well, anyway, we were out. Kansas Native Plant Society has an annual meeting. We were out in Great Bend, and, you know, we're plant geeks, and if you're a plant geek, you really need to join us, because we run around, we go, oh, ladies' tresses, get over here. Then you go, no, stop, you're going to step on it, slow down. There'll just be this crush of people running to look at plants. It's wonderful. Okay, so devil's claw. Jeff goes, oh, Diane, this is such a beautiful plant. It has pretty flowers and everything. But look at how vicious this is. And I'm going to pass this around. And please be careful because the end is really, really sharp. This is like some material that should be used in the space program or something. It's so tough. And it's a real problem out west. It gets into cattle's noses. It creates problems. I see people nodding. But anyway, oh, and the seeds are kind of like sunflower seeds. And the first few rows you can get out pretty easily, and then it's hard to get them out. I don't want this plant in my garden. It's a weed. Okay, so I know there are many more wonderful stories that we have to hear about adventures in gardening. So please consider joining Native Plant Society and sharing your seeds and your knowledge about plants with all of us. And I would like for us to maybe have a little formal seed cooperative. So think about that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. John, I think we've got John Exdell going to share some information on your recent travel. Is that correct?
What?
Your recent travel? Is that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wait.
I'm just going to show you a few slides. There we go. Well, like Sylvia, my interest in gardening is something that was created and communicated by my father. However, unlike her, I have no memories of that influence. I was the youngest of three children and had older sisters, and they tell me about their experiences of helping my father succeed in his garden, and I have no such memories. The only thing I remember is the compost bin, a very large one that had this rather peculiar odor coming from it. And it's a very positive memory, and so I have a compost bin in my garden now, and I think I get that from my father. But I didn't talk with him about gardening. I don't think I participated in the growing of the plants or the weeding or anything of that nature. But somehow, subliminally, his influence got me. And so let me just tell you a little bit about him. He was a champion gardener. During World War II, the country promoted the idea of having what they called victory gardens, right, where ordinary people were prompted and encouraged to grow food for local consumption so that the war effort could continue. So these were called victory gardens, and the main part of the country's agriculture went to support the war, and ordinary folks had to kind of step in and fill the gap. So here is the main page here, the starting page of the New Garden Encyclopedia, a complete practical and convenient guide to every detail of gardening. 1943, there's the symbol, Victory Garden, down there at the bottom. And it has, this book has 1,380 pages. It is really an encyclopedia. I meant to bring it today just so you can see the heft of it, but forgot it on the table. So this, my father was literally a champion victory gardener. He won a prize for the best garden 3 years in a row for North Central Illinois. And his gardens were apparently just amazing things. And I have no memory of them. I don't see how that could be possible, but that's the way it is. Next picture. There he is. That looks like a beet and parsnips. And this is a very misleading picture because he was not a happy man. He and my mother didn't get along very well. He didn't like the United States of America. He came here in 1912 as a 14-year-old boy. He made the voyage all on his own through Ellis Island. But didn't like this country very much for various reasons, politically and so on and so forth. But here he is. This was when he was really a happy human being, when he was gardening and when he was winning these prizes. Go ahead. So here is roughly where he was from the island of Lesvos, Greece. Now this is a small town called Pelopi, just a couple of miles from his village. I couldn't find a picture of his hometown called Kapi, so this will have to do. And all of these villages, which are on the mountainsides of sides of mountains, have gardens. And these are gardens that require spring water coming out of the seams of the mountain. And in Kapi, which these gardens are always below the village, in Kapi, they have water flowing out of the mountain, various springs. They pool it up in reservoirs made of concrete and stone, and then it's channeled into the various gardens below. People have a right to so much water for their particular gardens. And they're beautiful gardens. So that's where he started gardening. That's where he learned about gardening, in a village just like this, a few miles from this. Next. So here are I just visited my relatives, which I do every few years. And here are Kostas and his grandfather in their garden. So you can see how they rig up their tomato plants. Nothing fancy like what we do here. They just use some bamboo sticks, and there it goes. And they're quite successful. They don't have to pay a dime for their tomato cages. Or I should say a euro. Communities like this are actually much better off today than people in Athens because they have their gardens, for one thing. They usually own their homes. They have their gardens. So Costa, who is 19 years old now, has no prospect of finding work. Right? I mean, that's the way things are there now. Just people are really in bad shape. But on the islands, at least, they have their gardens and they have their olive groves. So they get a few thousand euros a year from their olive groves, possibly. And then they grow their food. And all the other food that they don't grow personally is grown in the area. So it's affordable. And that's how they survive. In Athens, people, however, are desperate. And I saw just a few days ago more beggars on the streets of Athens than I've seen anywhere in my life, including Chicago. Next. So, of course, gardening is about food, as we all know, and this was what was served one day when I was there last week. Salads, great tomatoes. Next. And this is stuffed zucchini, I believe, and stuffed with rice and meat, and that is a potato garlic sauce. It's very simple. You crush your tomatoes. You use olive oil, and garlic, and salt, and pepper. That's it, and it's just sensational. All of that comes from their gardens. Next. This is, I'm cheating here. This was not, this is a photo from a restaurant. But they had those, I didn't get to shoot the picture before they were all eaten up when we were, you know, having lunch one day. These are beets. And I'm told that people in the United States of America have this fundamental cleavage among us. Some people are beet lovers and some people are beet haters, right? I don't know why that is, but I never grew up liking beets, but I was converted by the beet experience of my life in the village of Kapi, where they really know how to prepare beets. And I grow lots of them every year now. Next. So this is what I just produced out of my Collins Lane garden, the community gardens. And everything was going wonderfully. And so what I try to do is, these are San Marzano tomatoes, Italian tomatoes. We try to make enough marinara sauce for a year's supply. And I was going great guns before I left, and then these rains came at just the wrong time. And a lot of the tomato plants kind of rotted. A lot of the tomatoes rotted. So split open from the water and then just rotted. So, but there is a happy ending. Nevertheless, I'm going to get lots of tomatoes out of this. But last year we had a kind of a communal picking, and I'm not sure we're going to get that this year because of what happened just in the last couple of weeks. So I brought some tomatoes. These are called Juliet tomatoes, first time I've tried them. And you can help yourself to a handful or two and put them in a little bag, and there's a recipe which you can also use for baking them, and garlic and olive oil and spices. That's all you have to do, and then you bake them for a couple hours. And I've never done it before, but it looks really good. So help yourself and take a little bag, fill it up with whatever number of tomatoes you need for a dinner. And there's a recipe right there, too. So, and also some just plain old Jetstar salad tomatoes there, too. So I think I've covered everything. Oh, yes, Sybil, yes. The community gardens are going great guns. The new section of it in Collins Lane is growing year by year. So last year we had 65 or so gardeners. We doubled this year, and it's expected that we will then triple the following year. So there'll be, you know, roughly 200 gardeners projected by the end of next year. Am I right about that?
Well, we've tripled our membership in the last 2 years.
Okay.
It's expected to continue.
Yeah, and there's 10 acres out there. If you're looking for really good gardening, and then, of course, the great thing about the community gardens is that it's a cooperative venture, and it's a great way to meet people and have a great social life out there. Gardening. So, go ahead, Sybil.
You. No, that was it. And we're just going to ask a show of hands. How many people here garden?
Oh yes.
Interesting.
About at least almost half or a third. Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks, John. Next we have Monta Manny, who is the plant whisperer, in my opinion.
I have first a very short reading from a book by Henry David Thoreau, and it's called Faith in a Seed. And anybody who does gardening has faith in a seed. Sometimes we are mistaken in our faith. I always have a pocket full of seeds. I even have a rutabaga seed. And that is one vegetable I have not been able to grow. But I'm still aiming on doing it one of these days. Anyway, the planters of Europe, this is an excerpt from this book, in the 1800s. The planters of Europe must therefore have a different and much more correct notion of the value of seeds than we do. To speak generally, they know that forest trees spring from seeds, but we know only that they come out of the earth, and when we cut them down as regularly as the fur grows on the hides of animals after the summer has thinned it. As time elapses and the resources from which our forests have been supplied fail, we too, of necessity, will be more and more convinced of the significance of the seed. And of course, food and seeds are synonymous. And I have a pocket full of seeds, and do we have? Oh, we have a slideshow that my husband put together for me. Because I'm a very informal gardener. Everything I look at is a garden. That was a garden, and that was me in Alaska in 1956. And here we are. This is my backyard. You'll see all sorts of things because seeds and plants aren't the only things in gardens. And we have many things. This lizard was on my back step, and this is my favorite type of frog. It's a tree frog, and it changes colors. And I think that's out of this world. That's an orchid bud. These are orchids. I have a greenhouse that I grow orchids in. It is fueled by a tiny little heater and stays at 50 degrees. That was an amaryllis. That's a wild plant. This is a cotton plant. And that one has a butterfly in the flower. This is a honeybee. And this you've probably seen before in the kitchen. And this is a hawk that we caught in my shade garden, in the shade house. And this is a woodpecker. Watch it. He's throwing out the sawdust. And there's Mom coming, and there he really is. This is a downy woodpecker. These are cedar wax rings. There's a sparrow, and blue jays, and this little finches, tufted titmouse, and of course a nuthatch. We call them tree mice because they look like mice running up and down. That's Mom's squirrel. And what she's doing there is eating the buds in the early spring off of a mulberry tree. And I had no idea they did that. But she was having a feast. This is a little bird called a painted bunting that I had in my yard this year. And I've always had indigo buntings and all the rest. That's Mom. She was tired. This is our goldfinches that eat much of the stuff that grows around there. Because in my yard, stuff goes everywhere. This is salsify. The goldfinches eat that before it goes flying away. I have turkeys. I have phoebes, and they sometimes nest on the drain pipe. I have an exciting yard. There's always something going on, and I just can't tell you about it fast enough. Here's again. That's my dog. She used to run like that, and she still tries to, but she's 18 now. And this is a dead owl. A little owl that hit a window and broke its neck. And I grow fish sometimes. Some years I have people come and do things like aquaculture and therefore fish. These mushrooms were growing in my house. And this turtle is a snapping turtle, a wild one, out in my driveway. And that's sort of how my garden goes. Wild, mostly. I have a number of things that I like immensely, like a nettle patch, stinging nettle patch over in the woods. It makes wonderful greens, the best. But you don't usually grow it in your yard in the city. And so there are a lot of things. And this is our bee project, as you can see. And this is one of our latest projects, is doing bees. This is a swarm. And there is our mentor up there on top of a skid loader, cutting off a piece and cutting off a piece of tree there. Got another frog in there. And that's a different kind of a frog. This is a caterpillar growing right outside my window, and I watched it for about 5 days, and it was huge. There were a whole bunch of them. That's a lotus, and here are my chickies. Aren't they cute? And there is almost no plant you can grow that chickens won't eat. So don't let them in your garden. That's Mark Moser and the solar collector. And this is my dog. She likes to herd chickens, so she's out there. And watering is one thing I do a lot of, even in this rainy spring that we're having now. That's another little bit of the beehives. And that's my yard. That's my garden, all of it. Here's my woodpecker again. I think these are out of order, Tom. This is a red-bellied woodpecker. That's a discus owl. The first time I ever saw one. And there's our... We don't seem to be getting to the end. Oh, I forgot the squirrels. No, I don't worry about squirrels. Mostly I don't feed the birds much in the summer because there's too much food around. And this butterfly was newly eclosed from its chrysalis. It was in the greenhouse, so I took it out on my finger and had Tom take a picture of it. There's my fig tree, my figs, and they're just beginning to get ripe. This, Dick will remember this butterfly. He can tell you the name. And I have grapes and a tiny little pond with water lilies in it. And then I have a bunch of weeds. And that's a catalpa tree grown from a seed. The seeds, this is a hazelnut. Some of you know what hazelnuts look like. Well, an iris. And in the wintertime, gardens are beautiful too. And in the spring, they're always at their peak. Mostly, I grow everything I can, or I should say, I allow God and Mother Nature to help me grow everything I am able to. Even lichens and other weeds. And there's a plain old ordinary frog. And more beautiful creatures. This is my orchid room. Went by fast. More butterflies hatched out in the greenhouse. and more orchids. I think they're going around twice. No? Okay. That's the lotus. This is evening primrose. Nasturtiums are one of my favorite flowers. They sometimes grow. That was a pea, and that's a Sabrina. More frogs, more cotton, and more orchids. And little flowers out in the yard. And every garden has its rabbit that is kind of the bane of gardeners' existence. This is a jack in the pulpit. And that's the end.
Thanks, Manta. Gardening makes us aware of food, aware of the climate, and aware of the earth when it is easy to lose touch with the most basic but essential things. Gardening provides so many things and is different for everyone. What is gardening to you? Please share your comments as we discuss. We have a few minutes of it.
Okay, hi everyone, Molly McGuire. Thank you for sharing. That was really fun. And I'm kind of a failure of a gardener this year. I had serious rabbit trouble, and we only have really the herbs and some cherry tomatoes and onions that have made it. But we're getting ready to do the fall stuff. John, you won't remember me, but I was one of your philosophy students years and years ago, and I can attest that tomatoes are important to you, because I vividly remember one of your lectures. It was about commerce and whether or not we share with each other or not, and he said, what if you grew a bunch of tomatoes and someone came and said 20% of those tomatoes are mine? How would that make you feel? And so you were passionate about it, and I'm older than I look, so I won't date us or anything and say how old it was, but when each of you were up there, I was thinking about how relevant this was to your personalities and what you care about and what you do. So thank you for sharing.
I want to know about those seed pods that Monta brought in that are laying up there.
What?
That bunch of things that Montemani brought in. Those.
Just some weeds. Actually, out of Matt's garden.
Oh. I agree with you.
At the edge of the wheat there. Matt's wheat.
Yeah. I planted some turkey red wheat in Tom and Monta's, I guess, garden. Yeah. Lawn. And these are what I actually grew. So, lots of them. What was that? Is this a milkweed?
The largest pod.
This is a milkweed.
The largest pod is milkweed. And when it dries out, it'll split open and just scatter those seeds, and they'll float all over the air. Put your hand on the yucca pods.
That's this one?
Yes.
Yeah.
That makes the plant itself has long leaves, and they make wonderful, wonderful fibers if they're pulled off and retted, which means you rot them. You have to get them to the stage they smell like cow manure. And then pour it off, and all the green part comes away, and you're left with a wonderful white fiber for doing whatever you want to do with fibers. But the pod itself, the flowers, beautiful white candelabra flowers, is edible. The petals are edible. They can make salad out of them. The seed pods are also edible, and they taste sort of they're sort of disappointing. They taste like zucchini or thereabouts. But it has a beautiful capsule and makes a wonderful winter bouquet. The tallest one there with a pink flower on it, I had one, but it was a different one. But all the seeds were coming out. And what it looks like in there is a big round cheese, all divided in little pieces. So come take a look at it if you don't know what a hollyhock looks like. And then if you come round back there, there's a short with a yellow on top. There we go. Has a wonderful soft leaf that kids love because it's just, they call it flannel leaf. Somebody help me out.
Well, it's fuzzy. It's the real
Yeah,
heavy.
It's fuzzy. It's a mullein
plant. It's a mullein.
And it'll grow much bigger than that. That's just a little one. But it's soft, just like flannel.
It's usually gigantic. And people right. say Native Americans used them for bandages or toilet paper or diapers or whatever.
And in Europe, since the plant came originally from Europe, those seed heads, which grow very large, that's a small one, were used for torches. They would dip them in some kind of oil or paraffin or whatever they had, fat, goose grease, and light them on fire and use them for torches before we had electricity. And so there are all sorts of interesting uses.
So toilet paper and torches.
I've never tried it, but hey, that sounds like a good idea.
More questions?
Yeah, I think a few more, yeah.
I just wanted to share this story for those of you that didn't raise your hand when we ask who gardens. I love the stories about how we grew up caught gardening from our families. But I didn't. I grew up in Southern California in the concrete jungle. We had a patch of grass. That was it. We only ate canned vegetables, so I hated vegetables. But maybe it was children's stories, or it must have been stories. The idea of a farm and growing things was always like a fairy tale to me. It was just, the idea was just magical. And it wasn't until I went to school in Northern California at UC Davis, which happened to be an ag school, I visited a friend's family's farm and had a warm peach right off the tree that was warm by the sunlight. And we picked tomatoes right out of the garden, and I'd never tasted anything like that again. And from then on, I went into environmental education and took lots and lots of advantage of all the ag classes and farm classes and gardening classes and community gardens in every community we've lived in since. So it's not too late, even if you had family that didn't garden.
Hello. I remember when I was gardening a long time ago, I had grown a dill plant. Then one day I came out and I found about 20 monarch butterfly caterpillars on it eating the whole thing off. I thought they only ate milkweed, but it turns out they love dill too. And also I was in Korea and they plant every square inch of that country. If you have a small plot about the size of this chair here, they'll plant something in it. So I thought that was pretty neat. So it kind of inspired me to garden some more.
All right, thanks for your comments. Dick, you want to come lead? Our closing hymn is number 1067. It should be in your supplement.
This is a very nice tune. You might not be familiar, so please just chime in when you're able, even if it's the second or third verse.
Mother Earth, beloved garden, living treasure underfoot, all our days you ground our being, sage and thistle, grass and root, herbs to heal us, plants to feed us, land to till and tend and plow. With the pendant deep as midnight, north we ask you be here now. Father, air your inspiration holds together all that lives. As we breathe, our minds see clearly, leading us to love and give. Raging whirlwind, whispered breezes, violet gale and gentle cloud. With the blade as sharp as morning east, we ask you be here now. Brother fire, great transformer, share the passion of the sun. In our hearts you warmth revives us, cook our food and heats our homes. Flaming candle blood within us, blazing desert. With the one directing power south, we ask you be here now. Sister water, ever flowing, ocean, river, pond, and rain, drink we now and quench our thirsting, cleanse us, we begin again. Mist and ice, a host of changes, all that courage will allow. With the cup, the holy chalice, west we ask you be here now. Lover, spirit, intuition, in the center of our souls, in your love we find relation, all connected we are whole. Timeless mystery, quiet conscience, deepest values, voice inside. With the drum and with the cauldron, this we ask you be our guide.
Thank you. Let's enjoy coffee and discussion.